1925, Frank Crummett singing The Bootlegger's Daughter. Prohibition began 90 years ago today. It's almost impossible to imagine such a change taking place today. But 90 years ago, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution took effect. And like some bizarre digression, the basic law in the United States suddenly banned the manufacture and sale of alcohol. I mean, read the Constitution from top to bottom. It says nothing about booze, bootleggers, or moonshine. But the Prohibition movement had been a powerful force in American politics since 1810. It gathered momentum from women taking political power, outraged by what drunkenness had done to marriages and families. It culminated in that 18th Amendment, a radical change to American life that's almost impossible to contemplate today. Suddenly, a simple drink was a criminal act, and the ways people got around Prohibition were as real a part of America as teetotaling.
Now, this is where we take the orders for the booze. Now I'll show you what we make. This is the deluxe department. The boy here is making champagne. Tonight, it will be delivered at the best circles. $15 a quart.
Is it real champagne?
No, it's diluted New Jersey Applejack.
It's kind of cheating, isn't it?
Cheating, yes. Cheating if you get caught. But you don't get caught if you take care of the right people. And this is big business. Very big business.
That's from the Roaring Twenties, a James Cagney and Priscilla Lane movie of the 1930s. Tom Fleming, historian and author of the new book, The Intimate Lives of Our Founding Fathers, is here in the studio to talk about what Prohibition's legacy is today, both politically and culturally. Thinking back 90 years today, Prohibition began. It was really a shocker to see that on the calendar. Welcome to the program, Tom Fleming.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, John.
What do you think led to Prohibition? Because I can't imagine such a change. Constitutional amendment taking place today. And what do you think Prohibition's legacy is today?
What led to it was the success of the abolition movement. And the Prohibition Party, which was formed in 1869 as a separate political party, almost all of them were sons or actual workers in the abolition movement, which got rid of slavery. And they thought this was the next great movement, the next great moral transformation of America. They were completely deluded about this, I'm sorry to say, but this was what was on their minds.
In many ways, did women lead the way on Prohibition?
They did. They really did. The most famous of them all was Carrie Nation. She was from Kansas, and Kansas was the first state in 1881 to vote itself completely dry. They had these local option laws, and towns could vote themselves dry, and then Kansas voted themselves dry as a state. And Carrie was already at work in Kansas with an axe. She'd charge into a saloon and smash the place to smithereens.
And did she do this in public and get away
absolutely.
With it?
Absolutely. And she got away with it almost all the time. And she had a legion of supporters, too. And this really appealed to women who wanted to do something to really have an impact, you know, and you could see why.
What did the rest of the world make of the U.S. attempts to morally cleanse itself through Prohibition?
They were absolutely baffled and ironically amused, I guess you'd say. Canada, for instance, was really astonished. But they proceeded to take over a great many of the liquor industries that we had in this country and start running them up there. When I wrote this, article in the Wall Street Journal, I got a call from somebody who said, "I bet you don't know which president had a bootlegger father." And I said, "No, I really don't." He said, "Joe Kennedy."
Well, in many ways, that made the Kennedy fortune, Prohibition did.
It really did,
It made the political career of J. Edgar Hoover, who, of course, took over the enforcement of Prohibition from the Department of the Treasury.
Right, yes.
It destroyed the reputation of Andrew Mellon, the Secretary of the Treasury, because he had interests in distilleries.
Right, right.
And listen to this voice, Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia in the 1920s.
Prohibition cannot be enforced for the simple reason that the majority of American people do not want it enforced and are resisting its enforcement.
So what led to the 21st Amendment, which was the biggest, I guess you might call it, never mind in
yes.
history, which repealed Prohibition?
There was a change of political parties. The Democrats came in, and the majority of, and certainly in New York, the majority of the voters were Irish Democrats. And
What are you saying there?
Exactly. What are you implying?
I'm implying that Irish like to drink. And they really felt this law was a direct blow at them. Woodrow Wilson had made a remark during World War I that ethnic Americans were pouring poison into the veins of American life. And this turned every Irishman in the country off about Wilson, and so they tied it in with him. But once that legacy of the Democratic Party was swept away by 10, 15, 13 years of prohibition, they were ready to vote Democratic again, and that's how they got the majority to put Franklin D. Roosevelt in.
And bootleg and moonshine really did some medical damage. Pain was inflicted all over the United States.
Oh, absolutely. They were making absolutely lousy stuff that was poisoning people. But another thing was the economic damage. The federal government and state governments got $500 million a year in taxes from the liquor industry. It vanished.
Right.
And the liquor industry was the seventh largest industry in the United States. In fact, nobody knows this, but one of the biggest distillers in the country in the 18th century was George Washington. He had a big distillery at Mount Vernon.
Well, Tom Fleming is a historian and author of the new book, The Intimate Lives of the Founding Fathers, talking about 90 years ago, Prohibition began. Thank you, Mr. Fleming.
Oh, you're welcome.